Welcome to the How the Heck Have You Been podcast. I'm Mark, and as the title would suggest, I just call up a bunch of people I haven't talked to forever and ask them how the heck they have been. So here's some intro music and the show. All right, y'all, here is my conversation with Mrs. Pamela Banner. She was my 8th and 9th grade English teacher at Hurst Junior High, and she's the teacher who inspired me to be a teacher. So you can imagine how much I was looking forward to talking with her, getting caught up. It was very fulfilling and fruitful, and I had at least one grammatical error that I caught in editing. See if you can catch it and email me at artbymarker.com for a prize. But other than that, I really enjoyed sitting down to talk with her, and I hope you like what we had to say to each other. Oh, there she is. Hello, it's Miss Banner.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad that worked.
Yeah. They make it pretty easy these days. That's one of the nice things about this podcast is that, you know, we started it after the COVID, so almost everybody has like a little home studio now that they have all been teaching from or working from, so.
I've never had to do it. I never missed a day during COVID.
That's amazing. So what were you? So let's just jump into that. What were you doing at that time? Are you mentor teaching, I guess?
Still, yeah. 21 years worth.
That's amazing. So when was your last year to teach full time?
2002.
Wow. Okay. So that was pretty soon after I left, cuz I had you from till 2001, right? So that must have been one of your last years.
Yeah, right after you left. Yeah.
So what was that decision like?
Well, it wasn't a hard decision, except because my husband had cancer.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. He retired in 2000, and so I just decided that it was better to spend time with him than to be at school.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready to leave, but it was necessary that I did at that time. He's never had any more problems, but of course was still in, you know, protocol at that time. And so anyway, I retired in June and they hired me in August. I was playing golf in Colorado.
And you got the call.
You remember Janet Swan that was an AP at Hurst?
Vaguely, very vaguely.
She never went to the office.
No.
Anyway, she worked under my husband at Pat May Center. And she was in charge of staff development. And the mentor teachers fell under her reign. And so she called me and said, I've got an offer you can't refuse. So I started doing it and liked it and been doing it for 21 years. So
nice. So what organization is that with? And with the Pat May Center, or is that
it's just HEBISD.
Okay.
And
so they have, okay.
Last year we were like a contract person, you know, like
right.
A consultant. And then last year the whole thing got revised and they put us on as just part-time. So
okay.
Used to we were not part of HEBISD and now we are. So, but it's still through the school district. I always got my checks from the school district.
Yeah.
So.
Well, nice. Okay. Well, so let's jump back a little bit. So you were my 8th and 9th grade GT/pre-AP English teacher, which was a little bit unusual. I think a lot of schools don't have that 2-year program. And I remember you also taught my older sister, who's 6 years older, Laura, Dye, at the time. In fact, her husband was just here. He was getting some work done. He comes over Mondays. So I texted Laura to see. I was like, hey, do you want me to tell Miss Banner anything? What? She hasn't responded yet, though. But that was, so talk about that program.
Okay.
I think I only had Miss Campbell 1 year, right? So I feel like it was only you we had for that 2-year block.
That's because I refused to give up my 8th grade GT class. I needed them an entire year for my 9th grade GT class. I didn't feel like any 8th grader that hadn't had me was ready for my 9th grade GT class.
Okay.
So I refused to give it up. I was the only 8th grade GT teacher, the only 9th grade GT teacher. And that's why you had Miss Campbell, like in 7th grade Texas history, but then you didn't have her again.
Right.
Because mine, years and years ago, Peak, when they called it Peak, when I first started teaching it, was a two-period block of American history and GT English.
Okay.
In eighth grade.
And so, they did away with that by the time I got there, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Long before you got there.
Yeah, I do remember it was Peak, though, because that's what it was called when I was elementary school. Pupils
yes,
excelling in advanced knowledge or academic knowledge or something.
Yeah. That's it.
They're always changing the acronyms on us and initialisms.
I know.
But you had a reputation. I remember Laura saying, you know, all of the students don't really enjoy the class that eighth grade year, but the ninth grade year they fall in love with you because you really did build up those skills and foundations, and then it was like smooth sailing and rigorous work in ninth grade.
Yep.
It worked.
I had lots and lots of kids at Bell High School come back and tell me that my class was the hardest English class they took in 4 years, which I thought was criminal.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They were dead serious, you know, and a lot of it had to do with the vocabulary we did and their high SAT scores because of that. So lots and lots of validation for what was going on.
And just to heap on more validation, so, you know, you taught, I have already interviewed Lauren, now Danhoff Denson at the time, and Laura Dupay. So I need to get Toby. Toby's on my list. In fact, I just texted. We play racquetball every now and then. So I need to get him on the show too, because you shepherded us, especially me. I had the benefit of being the weak link, but having the benefit of people around me who are a lot stronger. And so I don't know if you remember, Lauren and Carmel also planned a Bastille Day party. Do you remember that?
Yes, absolutely. I still have a big 8x10 picture of all of you.
That's amazing. So I feel so blessed to have been around them, and because, you know, you taught Frankenstein to us, and I will admit here and now, I did not read. I read the first couple letters of him to his sister, and I was like, I'm out. This doesn't have the monsters in it. Yep. And then by the time we got to Tale of Two Cities, I was like all in. So I don't know what that was, what it was about Dickens that onboarded me to literature, but I'm sure it was at least a majority of your instruction. And just the way I still remember you talking us through that first chapter in the mist when the mail coach is coming, and the first famous best of times, worst of times speech. And so,
Yes.
I mean, you certainly ratcheted me into academics. So I appreciate it.
I think so much of that, and I do this with my first year teachers. So much of that is what you love. And I loved it. So it was easy to teach it and try to get my kids to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were areas which were shortcomings of mine, which would never have come across, like Tale of Two Cities or The Odyssey or any of the other works that I loved, you know. But even my first years, there are things that they are really strong in because they love it. And there are other things that they feel like it's a weakness, and that's where they have to work.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because my first 2 years, I think, we were required to teach Great Expectations, which was the opposite for me. I did not like Great Expectations because it just wasn't A Tale of Two Cities. And so we tried to do our best, but that isn't a unit that sticks out of my mind. I taught The Odyssey as well. That was really fun. We put Odysseus on trial, actually. That was a really fun main project. And so, yeah.
Mark, you would be so sad to see what they're doing now with that. It's in a cartoon book. And it says things like pow, bam. it's criminal. I went to a school board member over it. I was so distressed. And my first year teacher, who was from California, who already has a master's degree, was horrified to have to teach that. I went to the director of curriculum for English, and I said, this is a travesty. Well, we have so many children now that need the extra help. And I said, so you're penalizing all grade level ninth graders by not giving them the language associated with that? They've never heard the term iambic pentameter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, I've noticed
Romeo
that too.
Juliet was the same thing. Cartoon book for Romeo and Juliet. I said, well, do you teach iambic pentameter? Oh, no, that's not in our curriculum.
That's pretty rough. That's pretty rough.
That's rough.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of watering down. I've noticed a lot of not wanting to even do novel studies. Like, I've even had to fight for novel studies in general as a, you know, as a recurring thing throughout the year. You know, I'm a fan of independent reading, Penny Kittle's program, but that, you know, that should be enriching the stuff you're teaching in class. But yeah, that's pretty rough. I'm shocked. I'm sometimes shocked at what my students don't know, that they never heard the term iambic pentameter, to your point. So let's go back even farther now. We're going back, we're working backwards here. So how did you get into teaching in the first place? Like, where did you grow up and what was that like in terms of, have you always been a teacher?
Yes, I grew up in Dallas. My mother was a first grade teacher for 27 years. And so when I went off to college, I just thought that's what you did. So I majored in elementary education. I did student teaching in second grade. And the second week, I said, I have made a serious mistake. I can't bear 8-year-olds. So I graduated, had a degree, and immediately when I substituted for 2 years before I decided I really needed to do that. I remember driving to Dallas, where my mother taught, to her elementary, because Dallas paid $20 a day and HEP only paid $16 to substitute. Now think back that far.
That's, yeah.
And so anyway, I started teaching at Euless Junior High, taught 7th grade reading. I was there 2 years, and in that time period, if you were pregnant, you had to quit before you were showing. So you had to quit before 6 months. Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You had to just quit and resign?
So you had to quit.
Oh, my God.
It was May. I got through May, and then he wasn't born until November, so I made my time frame. And then I stayed out and a year. And then the principal at Hearst Junior High, who was a friend of mine, called begging for me to come and teach reading, and I did, and that was 1 year, and the next year, I moved to 7th grade English.
Okay.
And then the second I could get out of 7th grade, I went straight to 8th grade.
Yeah.
Because I told, if you remember, when y'all came into my 8th grade class, I said, if you have the mentality of a 7th grader, you need to keep it a secret because I don't even like them as human beings.
I do remember
even
that.
Even my own grits. I do remember it. My own grandkids, not them. So you didn't like us in 7th grade? No, I tolerated you the entire year in 7th grade. So I was happy with my 8th graders and I kept them for years. And then when I moved to 9th grade, I went back and got my master's. And then when I moved to 9th grade, I kept that one 8th grade class.
Yeah, it was funny you mentioned 7th grade because I'm at a small private school now, and it's 6th through right now 10th, and then we're adding 11th, 12th as they age up. But I only teach the 9th grade and 10th grade, and just hearing the 6th, 7th graders out in the hallways, I'm like, no, I'm channeling Miss Banner right now because I would not do well with those off-the-wall, pre-pubescent, hormonal.
I really admire the ones who are cut out for it. I have some that are great 7th grade teachers. But the ones who are distressed, I just tell them, get out of 7th grade. You'll be happier.
Yep.
So one of mine this year is going to move from 7th to 9th. And so that will be a shift for her. But another one's moving from 9th to 7th. So I said, good luck.
You never know, though. You never know who's going to really hit a good stride with what age group.
Exactly.
But having now grade school age kids, I could not do that. I've gone up and volunteered a couple of days, and I'm like, oh man, this is not me. I do not have the patience and structure for a second grade class.
No, me neither. And I knew that very quickly. And as I tell them all today, and they ask me something, I say, I do not speak elementary, so I don't know the people. I don't know anything about it. I'm not there because I'm only the five junior highs: Bell, Trinity, Keys, the Tech Center, and AEP. I have them sometimes. So I had 26 first years this year. So if they've never taught, then I get them for the year. From August till May And I have a weekly rotation. I see half of them 1 week and the other half the next week.
That's great. So, now, are you the only one that does that? Or are there others who...
I'm the only secondary.
Okay.
I'm the only secondary. There's two elementary that split up the elementary people.
And that seems like a good administrative position to have. There are so many districts now are so top heavy. It's ridiculous. And the only way to get promoted is out of the away from students into the administration. But
I know.
But it sounds like your position is really valuable.
Well, I enjoy it, and my only job is to support them. You know, I don't evaluate them. I don't report to anybody about them. If I'm asked about it, I certainly give information. And luckily, I know all of the secondary principals. In fact, let's see, one of them I mentored. He's just now leaving to go be principal at Trinity High School.
Oh, well, that's not Bannister, is it?
No, Bannister retired 2 years
ago. That's what I thought.
I taught him, of course. But Michael Martin was a first-year teacher at Hurst Junior High. And I mentored him in 2002, in the fall of 2002, when I started mentoring. I had him, and now he's been in the district 21 years. He's going to be the new principal at Trinity. He just left Bedford as principal.
Wow, okay. Nice.
So, yep.
Now, I believe, so Jim Bannister and Dee Campbell, I don't know if they were living, because you know Mike Shilley too, right?
Yes,
I know. And so they grew up, because the Shilleys lived right across from my dad, and I know Miss Campbell lived just down the street over there in Hurst, and I think Bannister did too, all growing up together.
Yeah, he did. He did. His family did. Yeah.
Yep.
Y'all were all very in that same little neighborhood.
Yep. And my dad's still there. He's still kicking. We're trying to get his pool up and running is our new task this summer. He lets it go to pot every summer and every winter.
Oh boy. You knew Miss Campbell passed away.
No, I did not. When was that?
Yes, she did. Let's see. My good friend passed away on April 1st. So that was on a Saturday, and he died on Tuesday.
Of this year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe I did not hear that. I'm sorry for you, because I know y'all were very close.
Very close. Very close. And they had she called it a party. They had a party at Dee's house, and her daughter and grandkids and everybody and all of us and a bunch of former students came to that. It was just, she wanted a party. She didn't want any kind of service, a memorial or anything. She wanted a party. So that's what they did. So,
well, she was a force of nature too. Y'all were legends. And you probably were pretty good friends with Jennifer Rogers as well. Or was
Susie?
That? What's that?
Mary Sue Rogers.
Oh, Mary Sue. Okay, somebody ordered some of my stuff, and it was a Jenny Rogers. I was like, was that Miss Rogers? Because I didn't know who they were or how they found my stuff. No. But okay.
Yeah, Miss Rogers was my college roommate.
Oh.
We went to high school together.
That's amazing.
We went to high school together, and she came back here from Florida and said, "I need a job, a doctor, a babysitter," and gave me a list. And so I said, "Okay, I'll fix you up."
Great. And she used to always listen to jazz, if I'm not mistaken. She liked who's the guy with the curly hair that played saxophone? I can't remember. She always would play him in class. Anyway.
I don't know.
What college did you go to?
North Texas, University of North Texas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Both
Me
degrees.
Too. Go Eagles.
Both degrees. Mm-hmm.
Nice. I need
now,
to go.
I claim A&M because I sent my son down there in 1985, and now my eighth grandchild has graduated from A&M as of 2 weeks ago in May, and my ninth grandchild and last one is a freshman August 1st.
At A&M?
Nine grandkids with Aggie rings, and they don't have good jobs.
That's pretty wild.
So,
well, how many children do you have? Did you have two sons?
Two boys.
Okay, that's
two
what
boys.
I thought.
Yeah, one has six and one has three.
Oh my gosh, six!
Every one of them, A&M. So,
God bless them, because we were two and done.
So, I'm proud of them. So,
and they all went to A&M. That's crazy.
Every one of them. Yep.
All right.
So, So we have one more A&M graduation, and that's it. We've been going to them since 2016 when the first batch went.
So. You're used to the speeches by now and used to all of the, yes, the fight song, yes, or the school song and all of that.
Yes. But at least I've been to my last high school graduation, because he graduated Memorial Day. And then he'll be down there on April 1st as a freshman. So.
Nice. So what kind of stuff are they all doing? Are they, like, what careers are they going into?
Well, let's see. The majority of them, three of them came out of the honors program at Bay's Business at A&M. So they're all in some kind of, most of it has to do with IT. My granddaughter works for a global company, and she just won in Dominican Republic Salesperson of the Year for her global company.
Wow, nice.
Which was a huge award. And so we're real proud of her. She got married a weekend before last. And so they're headed to Japan for their honeymoon. So anyway.
You have been busy.
It's nice to keep up with them all.
Let me say, I appreciate you sitting down with me. It was funny. I messaged you and asked if you had a second. You're like, well, I do, because we're done with the graduations, the weddings, this.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'd say if I had a word to describe you, it would be matriarch. You know, you are like you were this in most regards, right? You've got this amazing family. You're a grandmother of all of these successful kids, and the way you treated us, in both the warm sense, because there was warmth and nurturing from you, but also, you know, as you've talked about the seventh graders, you know, holding us in line and holding us to a standard. So, yeah. So anyway, that's amazing.
It's hard sometimes. I appreciate all that, Mark, because, you know, these new teachers that I work with, I try to enforce it on them that they don't have to have my personality to
right.
be successful. It worked for me. And my kids just knew there was no quarter. I mean, there's so many discipline problems today and so much lack of support that they get very frustrated. And I just didn't experience that. I just had an expectation for my kids. And I try to tell them, if you will just be firm and fair, then they'll respect you. And once they respect you, you've got them. Then you can do anything with those kids.
Yeah.
You can have a lot of allowances. But once they realize that all you care about is their success and being an achiever, then you got them. And that's what I try to impress on all of these young teachers, you know, is that you cannot be their best friend and sit on the edge of the desk with your feet up and yik-yak with the kids, because then you're going to lose them.
Yeah.
You are going to lose them. And all my high school people who are on the try get it. After the first try, they say, I finally get it. I am starting over second try. But my junior high people don't have that option.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Until May. And they all at the end of this year say, boy, am I starting over next year? And I said, I understand.
Yep.
I told you.
For those who didn't go through HEB school district, we were on the trimester schedule in high school, so it's three semesters per year instead of two, which was kind of odd, but it worked out really well. It's really efficient, right? Because you get an extra class per year or something like that in the schedule.
Yeah, they always get. Yeah, that's what part of it's about, is getting the extra classes.
Yeah.
So
everything I still hear about Hurst-Euless Bedford is really positive in terms of the pay scale is really competitive. The way they run
it's
really great.
Area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what private school are you with?
So, okay. I worked at Grapevine High School, as you know, for my first 5 years.
Grapevine High School.
I took three off to be a stay-at-home dad. And then I went back to Grapevine Colleyville's Early College High School, which is they're on TCC's Northeast campus, but it's a Grapevine Colleyville school. Yeah. So we taught 9th and 10th grade to get their core classes taken care of. And then they go to TCC for a bunch of dual. And so they can graduate 4 years of high school with an associate's, which was really great program. Yeah. So I would teach ninth grade English. And there's a bunch of them. I know HEB, I heard they were thinking of one, but haven't done it. I think Keller's opening one.
Well,
there's a bunch popping up.
Done it.
It takes a lot of partnering with TCC or other community colleges.
Yeah.
So it's a big undertaking. And then I stepped down full time because it got to be a little too much for me. To both my wife and I, she's a nurse practitioner, so she was working full time. I was working full time. We had two young kids, you know, for that was when Margo was just born. I went back. And so I stepped down and I subbed for a couple for a semester in Grapevine Colleyville. Then I got headhunted by this private school that's soccer, focuses primarily on soccer. There's like this really elite coach, and he is world renowned apparently, and he, you know, it's this really well run soccer school for kids who want to do that professionally potentially. And so it's a full high school. We're accredited, you know, for a full high school diploma. But then in the mornings they're just doing the athletic soccer, then they come to us first, second for core classes, and they have
really?
All, yeah, so it's pretty
Where
cool.
Where is this?
It's in Euless. It's actually just down the block from Trinity High School. So we follow HEB's schedule for like for bad weather and stuff like that. It's on on Euless, Maine, and
157.
Yes, I believe so.
Is it? There was a school back in that on that southeast corner.
Yep, that's it. Yep. Allegiance Academy.
Darned.
Yeah.
And what's it called?
Allegiance Academy.
Allegiance Academy.
Yeah, it's
soccer.
Yep.
I'll be darned.
And at first they just had boys, and then they had slowly added girls that first year. So we have a few girls, but it's mostly boys. But it's kind of nice because we don't get – you could think of a class of boys as behavioral problems, but they've just come to me after, you know, sprinting and running and weight training. So they're usually pretty tired and well-behaved.
Yeah. Well, how big are your classes?
Oh, very small. I think their goal is 16 or less for class
how
size.
Nice.
Yeah. And I'm just, wow. I mean, it's a pretty sweet gig. They let me, because they were looking for male teachers, I think, especially who could, you know, who could engage the boys. And so they were excited to hear about me. And they have a lot of connections with Grapevine Colleyville. So, And so they got my name.
I always thought it was a travesty that HEB didn't hire you and you ended up in Grapevine. And then all this experience with Grapevine Colleyville instead of, in fact, I've used you as an example many times because at that time, until last year, we had a very late hiring policy. And so other districts gobbled up
all
these
the new
great
ones.
Candidates because we wouldn't open up the hiring. And last year, they finally got the message and started opening our hiring earlier. But it was just a mess for years. And I always used you as an example.
I wonder
interview with Leslie Guajardo?
I don't think there was an opening. My recollection is you set up a mock interview, I believe, with Bannister.
Yes.
And he said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't have an opening right now with English. And then, but I don't remember interviewing officially with HEB because I don't think there was an English opening at that time.
Probably.
And maybe
not.
Because they hadn't, you know, they hadn't opened them yet. So I had done my student teaching at Grapevine.
That's probably it.
And so I got in with them. Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember coming to watch you student teach.
So this would be a good time to bring this up. And you didn't just come to see me. You also brought a nice book, which I still have, a collection of Charles Dickens' 4 complete novels. And this, the last 2 years I've read A Christmas Carol at Christmas time. It's so good. It's so good. But I was going to read what you wrote to me because I will try to read what my friends have written in my yearbook. But of course, I've got this as well from you. Dear Mark, Dickens wrote, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, and certainly we can identify. But it is the best of times because the education community will now benefit by having an outstanding teacher among its members. I can only imagine what the future holds for you. Hopefully special young people will emerge into your life as they did in mine. What a joy you, Laura, Toby, and Lauren were. Best wishes for many happy years of teaching. Sincerely, Mrs. B. So,
yeah.
I still cherish this, Miss Banner. Thank you for that.
The truth. The truth. Ronnie, I was trying to explain to my husband. I said they were the four musketeers. I said Toby, Mark, Lauren, and Laura. And I said Carmel was part of that for a while.
And she left. I think she left midway through, yeah.
She did. She did. But I said those four were just like jewels.
Well, I will say that, you know, I have a couple core memories of you in the class, one of which was when we were about to start the To Kill a Mockingbird projects, you called the four of us in and you let us choose. I probably shouldn't say this to all the former students who were in that class as well, but you pulled us in and were going to let us choose ahead of time and ahead of the others. And you gave us this little talk about how much we were engaging with the book. And I still remember Toby and I partnered up and we did Gothic imagery in To Kill a Mockingbird. And that was a great, I remember highlighting that it was the first time I really got into, like, Dickens was great, but I remember marking up To Kill a Mockingbird and looking for that Gothic imagery. And just the act of not having remembered there being any Gothic imagery, I'm like, I don't think there was that much. And then when you go back and look, and it's all there and tweezing out, I still remember the wetness on the lady who was addicted to morphine. I'm now blanking on her name because it's been a while since I've taught it.
Miss DeBose.
Yeah, she had that wetness going down her, the crease of her cheek, and just that, that kind of grotesque imagery. Love that. And I forget what Lauren and Laura paired up and did, but I remember putting a lot of effort into that. As you say, you know, you did earn our respect and convince us to really put forth their effort. And then even more poignant episode, that was the year, no, that's not true. So my parents separated in sixth grade and they got divorced in seventh, but it must have been, do you remember if you taught the Odyssey in eighth or ninth?
Ninth.
Was it? Okay. So ninth grade, I remember Laura and Kelly had just moved out of our house to go to college, my two older sisters. And so our house was empty. I think my dad and I had just moved back in after living in an apartment. And so it was kind of a, it was a low point emotionally because the house is empty. It's you don't really realize how much you need people around until they leave and, you know.
Until two sisters are gone.
Are gone, yeah, completely from your life. And so it was just my dad and I. And I remember we went to see Laura's new apartment over the weekend, and I was going to work on my Odyssey project at that time, and I didn't have a chance to because we went over there or something. And I came to you and I was like almost in tears, probably slightly, you know, because I really wanted to do my best on this project. And you had us illustrating episodes from the Odyssey, and you had us doing this and this and this. And I came to you and you're like, Mark, just take an extra day. It's one of those things. I was like so in desperate need of just a little bit of lenience. It wasn't me being lazy, and you could see that. And so I remember just being grateful that you gave me that extra day. And then you later used that project as an example of to other students who hadn't done as well. I remember you pulling it out and like, look what Mark did on this. This is what I was looking for. So that, I don't know, that was awesome.
I tell all of mine now, I said, keep examples of how to make an A and how to make an F.
Yep.
Because you know, I had things that I said, does this look like it took 6 weeks to do? You know, it might have taken less than 6 hours, you know, somebody scribbled something down. So, yeah.
I also still, this is going to be a random memory. I remember I had spelled sandwich or something with a TCH instead of just a WICH. I remember you calling me out on it for some reason. That just stuck out to me. Like, Mark, does sandwich have a T in it? Like, no, ma'am, it doesn't. So I always remember how to spell which and which sandwich. Anyway,
that's amazing. It's just amazing. I'm always shocked at when I talk to some of these former students and what do they remember or not. And my next door neighbor went to Hearst, went to Bell, cannot remember one teacher he had at Hearst. Cannot remember one teacher he had at Bell, except maybe some math teacher. That's criminal. How do you go through that many years of school and you don't even remember somebody?
Mm-hmm. I was saying there was a coach that taught Spanish, and I remember thinking back only a couple of years after, and I could not even remember his name because he was such a terrible teacher. It's kind of crazy how some, you know,
teaching Spanish. Well, you surely had Miss Rowe for Spanish.
I don't believe so. I didn't take Spanish again until 10th, I believe, because I had Miss Grawander in the first half of 7th, and then I didn't enjoy it, and so stupidly they let me drop it, because you had to have, it was weird, because 7th and 8th grade Spanish only counted as like one credit instead of two.
Yeah,
and so whoever my counselor was should have convinced me to stay in with it, but, and then I did, so I was the first IB graduating class at Bell. And for IB, you had to have 4 years. So I had to take a summer school, Spanish 3 in summer school at TCC.
Oh, gosh.
To recoup that credit. Yeah, right. It wasn't great.
Huh. Well, bad counseling advice.
Yeah. Now, what about Miss Pabless? Because she was a huge inspiration for us as well, theatrically. Were you close with her at all?
I saw her at Dee's quote party.
Yes.
She was at Dee's house, and I got to see her again. I saw her for years at Hearst when I would go back, you know, as see my first year teachers. But then she left, and so I didn't see her again. But yep.
I should get her on the podcast.
I enjoyed her.
Oh, he's very nice. She let us, she let Lauren and Laura and I, and Toby, I think, probably too. She let us, because we were all in that ninth grade play as ninth graders, but then she let us come back, and I had written a script for a 10th grade play. She let us come back and direct it after school when we were in high school. So we did.
Oh, how fun.
Lauren's mom drove us back and forth to Hearst, and we directed that play.
What fun. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, doing this mentoring, I found out that the world does not necessarily revolve around English, as I always suspected, because I'm in every subject. I mean, I have drill team, and I have the wrestling coach, and I have band, and I have choir, and so, you know, the content doesn't matter. If they're a zero-year teacher, I have them for the year, and so I've just been exposed to so much, and I would have loved to see something like that, see, at the time, but... You just get involved in what's your realm and don't reach out. And I wish I had.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that must be kind of fun to see all of that. Do you actually learn a lot just sitting through on some of those classes?
I learned a lot. The first year I had third year Hindi and third year Mandarin Chinese.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They never spoke a word of English all year.
That's the only...
It took me half the period just to write the characters for the Mandarin on the board, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it was just... It was incredible. I loved them, and I'm still very close to both those teachers. That was 20 years ago.
That's got to be the best way to teach a foreign language, is just to treat the class as completely immersed. I've never understood the translation, like, just throw them in the deep end and start from the fundamentals and build it up. The way to do it. I need to do that with my girls a little bit more and try to teach them some Spanish, because I know a little, barely fluent, but survival fluency.
I miss that too. I had 2 years French and 2 years Latin, and so there you go. So foolish, you know. In Texas, you should take Spanish.
Yeah, Spanish. Although, I mean, Latin and French, I kind of regret not knowing much Greek and Latin etymology and linguistics. I loved my linguistics class at UNT. I really almost kind of wanted to go into that a little bit, but I won't say useless, but it's very not practical application.
Narrow.
Yeah,
narrow
exactly.
Field.
Yes. Very abstruse.
Yep. Well, I do think the Latin and all the base roots and all that, you know, probably helped. Somewhere down the line.
Oh, for sure.
So when I took the GRE to get in graduate school, I just knew I'd never get in because of the math. So, but the language was strong enough to carry me through get past the math. So.
Yeah, that would be my main obstacle is that math. I still don't have a master's. I probably should, although I mean, the pay isn't that much more different. You get a little bit of a raise for most districts for having it, but I just never really saw that much of a, like, I don't really need a master's to teach Lord of the Flies to ninth graders. But
and when I got my master's, are you going to go into counseling? No. Are you going to go be an assistant principal? No. You know, which part of that? I need the kids. I needed the kids. I did not want to be an administrator. I had a principal offer to pay for me to go back and get administrative certification if I would just come be an AP. Mm-hmm. And I went, absolutely not.
Yep.
I don't want any part of it. And of course, now I'm thinking, what a dumb thing. I could be making a lot more in retirement if I'd gone into administration like my husband. But I didn't. He still misses teaching, and he only taught 13 years and went straight to the you know, administration building, worked directly for the superintendent all those years. So
it's a terrible system. Anyway. I mentioned it earlier, but the fact that the only way to get the only way to get promoted up is out away from the kids. I've said it once and I'll say it a thousand times. I had a really close teacher at or close friend at Greyfound High School, and she did that. It was a tragedy because she was so good with like those on-level seniors that, you know, had really been kind of not shepherded along, and she really got a lot of great content out of them. And I remember her taking
it. That's a great loss.
Yep.
It's a great loss. That's what they do. They pull the good ones out and move them up because that's where the only financial, you know, benefit to teaching is to move up. And I just refuse to do it.
Well, I know Mike Shilley, he taught in Columbia for, I think, 7 years at a private school.
Yes.
And they were, I think he was an administrator, but they required all the principals and administrators to teach at least one class, which I think is a great, I feel like we should import that system somehow.
Was it last year or the year before he got Teacher of the Year at Birdwell?
It was 2 years ago, yeah. I believe he was at Richland High School still, and he's there now.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I had gotten Teacher of the year prior, and that was during COVID. And so I brought we were having a Super Bowl party at my dad's house, and he was there. So I brought my Teacher of the Year plaque. And brought it in with all the stuff I was carrying. I was like, "Oh, Mike, can you hold on to this?" And I gave him my Teacher of the Year thing. I was like, "Oh, I won it last year. It's not a big deal." And he didn't get it for a couple of minutes. He's like, "Why do you even have that?" And then he got that I was messing with him. But that's much more of an achievement than, you know, not to belittle myself, but our school had like 10 teachers, right? Is it the early college high school is very small, so it was. I was competing only against like 9 other people, 2 of whom had already won it and couldn't win it again. So, but anyway, his was much more of an accomplishment. But he's there at
still well deserved.
He's there at Richland, coaching golf and teaching English.
Huh. Well, he was a fabulous teacher. I loved being. I'd go watch him at Bell. You know, just to be in the room with him.
Definitely a stellar performer as well.
Yeah.
Funny, and
I should go over there and just show up one day.
You should. He would love it. He would love it. I don't know what his schedule is like though. He's always out and around, moving, golfing, traveling.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
So, have you been doing a lot of traveling? It seems like, you know, on Facebook, I see y'all moving around a lot. What have you been doing since?
We travel pretty much. We're going to Portugal in the fall. And then following that trip, we're going back to Palm Springs, California, taking my son and daughter-in-law in September. We usually go in August, but we're going to Kennebunkport for a week. And up there, it's such a resort area that you have to book everything for a whole week.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, it's very crowded because it's high season. Number two, the prices are higher. So if you go after Labor Day, you can just stay 4 or 5 nights, which is our preference. And then it's a lot less expensive. So we're going to go in September this year. And that's the nice thing about mentoring, because if I'm gone, I can work double the week before or double the week after. And as long as I check in, they don't really care.
Nice.
So those are the bit. We go to Minnesota the 20th of this month, and we are leaving Wednesday to take my grandson on a little trip down to, we're going to take him dancing in Green Hall and take him to San Antonio. The child has more stamps on his passport than I do. You know, he's been to France, he's been to Italy, he's been to Spain, he's been to Portugal, he's been, you know, but he's never seen the Alamo, he's never seen San Antonio, he's never seen the Riverwalk. We're going to take him to Enchanted Rock outside of Fredericksburg.
Yeah.
And then go through Fredericksburg and let him see, you know, German food and all that.
We're in Fredericksburg at least once a year. It's so nice down there.
Yeah.
We're members.
We used to go there a lot for golf.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of good golf. Yeah, too.
Yes,
Enchanted Rock's fun. My wife and I went when we were dating to Enchanted Rock, but we have not been back up there yet. And I hear, just FYI, I think you have to make reservations ahead of time because of COVID and all of that. So it's getting so busy that I think you have to have reservations to even get in.
I want him to see it, but I do not want my husband to try to go up it again.
Right.
And so
it doesn't look bad. And then you start hiking in, it's really huge and vast, this vast dome of a rock.
Been up there.
It looks just like a small hill, but
yep.
From far away.
We've got 2 nights in Green and staying at the Green Mansion Inn, and then we'll go to Green Hall, and we got tickets to see Larry Joe Thomas, so he's excited about that. So
now, is this your oldest grandson, or is it one of the middle ones?
Yes, my youngest.
Oh, youngest. Okay.
He just graduated from Marcus High School on Memorial Day, and he's a National Merit Scholar, Mark.
Nice. Look at that.
And he refused to wear any of his
what
cords. Are the Honor Society bib thing. He refused to wear any of that when he graduated. He just wore his little red robe. He didn't wear a red tie. He just didn't want any part of it. But he was academic first team for football, all-state first team academic. So
wow, what a winner.
He blew the top off the SAT, and I don't think he's ever made a B. He's just one of those kids that pays attention to what he's doing and does very well. So he's excited. He's ready to go to college.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So we've taken all those kids. We took Emily to Paris for her graduation. Then we took her sister Brittany to London for hers. Then we sent Cole and Zach skiing for a week. And I didn't realize they weren't old enough to rent a car, so I had to send both their daddies. So I sent both my sons and both of them skiing for a week.
Yeah, and what is it, like 23? You have to be like 23 or 27 to rent a car, something crazy?
Yeah. And they weren't. That's ridiculous. Just in graduated high school.
Yeah.
So we took a granddaughter to Charleston and Savannah. We took a grandson to New York City. He wanted to see stuff on Broadway. And then we took another granddaughter to San Diego because she wanted to learn to surf. And she did. And she was great. She was a natural. And the pro took her out to where I couldn't even see him and let her have his board. It scared me a lot.
Yep.
But she's the one that just graduated from A&M, and she's a marathon runner. And so she's a real athletic. So
yeah, that the strength of waves is no joke. When we went over to Gulf Shores, Alabama, and it was really wavy, and I had never been in waves that strong right on the shore, but it threw me against the bottom of the ground, the rocky gravelly sand part, and that's like, you know, that's no joke. You can get torn up in waves.
I understand there's an area off the coast of Portugal where the waves are at like 80 feet tall. I mean, they're huge. I've seen pictures of it, so I don't know if we'll see that when we're there or not, but maybe.
I'm so untraveled. I've never been to New York City. I need to get up there at some point.
I have a nephew that lives in New York City, but they have a beautiful two-story log house in the Catskills.
Jeez.
And so we go, we've been to the city and I've done all that and seen Broadway, yada, yada, yada. And so we leave and go to the Catskills. I prefer to be up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think after COVID, it was a mess too.
And I really like Chicago better than I do New York City. I just think Chicago's fabulous.
Chicago was fun. I did that right out of college. Did Second City. Yeah. That's great. And I was shocked that it truly was windy. It was very windy up there. I was like, oh, it really is the windy city. And they weren't lying.
We stayed right off the lake, and it was windy.
Yeah.
Windy. So, and cold. It was cold. Mm-hmm. We were there in September, and it was cold. So,
nice.
Anyway. So, but yeah, our motto is go while you can.
Yep. Yep.
You know,
Kate, I remember.
At our age, lots of people are shutting down and not able to travel or one thing after the next. And so we just keep going while we can.
Well, it must be not that bad anymore. How easy is it to travel outside of the country after all the COVID lockdowns and all of that?
Well, let's see. We went into Italy in 2019, and then we haven't been out of the country again.
Okay, so you don't know.
Until we're going this year, so.
It's one of those things that just it makes me nervous to try. I've never been to I've never been to Europe. So I really want to go to London. I really want to do see Dickens' writing desk and all of that. I think that would be my bucket list would be London.
When we were in Canada, we still had to go get proof, COVID proof to give back to the airlines to get back on the planes to come home. And it wasn't 2 weeks later till they dropped all that.
Right.
So but we were there, it was a year ago May, and when we were there, we still had to have all of that, all our documentation for the immunizations and everything to get in. So, so, but I think everything over in Europe now is pretty relaxed, you know. So I haven't seen anything that says you have to do this, that, or the other to get in anywhere. So,
and now you have you been to Portugal before?
No, we haven't. Nice. Now, my son Brian has been twice, once with the whole family. That's why Chance has his passport stamped when he was 11, you know. But he's been twice, once with another couple. And so I've already got a list of all these restaurants in Porto and Lisbon and, you know, a great golf course on the Gulf Coast and that kind of stuff. So,
and I assume, can you get around pretty well with just speaking English? You don't have to be Portuguese?
I think so. I think so. Of course, my husband's theory is if you have a MasterCard, they learn to speak whatever it is.
Real quick,
so,
yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So,
it's amazing how that works.
But they drive on our same side of the road, which is good because when we're in Lisbon, we rent a car and go down to the coast for 3 days and can drive around to where we want to go. So that'll be good.
Yeah, I wonder how many car wrecks are because of that, because of people who aren't used to driving on the right side of the road. It's got to be a lot.
I don't know. I drove all over Ireland, all over Scotland different times, twice in Ireland for a week each time, and then twice in Scotland. So now my husband was driving, but he ran straight into a wall that looked like a shrub.
Oh.
It was a shrub, but there was a wall behind it and knocked off our mirrors. So
oh,
I fired him first day, and I drove the rest of the trip. So.
Yeah, that's a fireable offense. The time change causes a lot of car wrecks because people are so discombobulated, waking up an hour early in the dark or light.
So how are Kelly and Laura?
They're doing well. So Laura is teaching at a private school in Fort Worth, Trinity Valley, and she's doing art for the grade school level. Kelly is with Arlington ISD, also elementary art teacher. And so they both have, Laura's got got three boys. So I've got three nephews, and then Kelly has a boy and a girl. And so they're both in the area. We're together most weekends or every other week, some family events.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So.
Will you be sure and hug them for me?
I shall. Now, you didn't teach Kelly, did you?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did? Okay. Did you teach all ninth grade English?
Well, 8th and 9th.
8th and 9th. Okay, so you had everybody. For some reason, I was thinking you only taught the like pre-AP GT kids. But
I always had, all my years that I taught, I made them give me one grade level class.
Okay.
Because I never wanted said that my scores were the highest
because I only
had the smart kids. And so the last, I don't know, 10 years I taught, I had four preparations. Because I had ninth grade GTIB, and I had ninth grade level, and I had ninth grade pre-AP, and then I had eighth grade GT.
Yep.
And the pre-AP and GT had similar curriculums, but 1 year before I had y'all, I had two girls in my GT pre-AP class, and because of the schedule and choir, they had to move from pre-AP into my GT class. And I don't remember if I was doing it with y'all, but at that time, I made them take a passage of Dickens and rewrite it as if Dr. Seuss had written
it. Yes. Yeah. I didn't and remember had you had done that because I did that with some of my classes too. I had forgotten you were the one who...
Yes, a passage of Dr. Seuss and write it as if Dickens had written it. And the minute I signed that, those two girls were at my desk, absolutely terrified. They said, "Miss B, we cannot do this." They weren't GT kids. That absolutely terrified them. I gave them both a separate project. I wasn't going to make them something that was... And everybody else, my GT kids, just ran with it. They loved it.
It was great. It was fun.
I still have samples of some of it, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
In my files, I have lots of your work, Lauren's, Laura's, Toby's. I always kept examples of good work, you know, so.
Nice. All right. Well, we're getting close to the hour mark, so I don't want to take up any more of your time because you have all that stuff you're doing, which is crazy. But when you have – how many – you said 9 grandkids? 4 and 5, right? No, 3 and 6. Yeah, 3 and 6. 9 grandkids.
6 and 3,
yep. Man, they keep you – are they – now, are they mostly in the area?
Well, 2 grandsons are in Nashville. 1 grandson's in Houston. I have a granddaughter in Aubrey. And then 2 granddaughters in Flower Mound. I have a granddaughter in Anderson, which is south of College Station. And then my one that just graduated is right now in Missouri working at Camp Canuck.
Oh, wow.
She works a camp up there. It's a Christian camp every year.
Is that close to Branson?
I don't know where she'll land. So I don't know where she'll land, but probably. And then my son's in Nacogdoches. You know, he moved. He went to college down there, never came home. And then the other one lives in Flower Mound.
And all over.
So he's
okay.
Close. Yep, all over.
Nice.
So.
All right, anyway, well.
But I keep in touch with them and get to see them a lot. And, you know, they're all the graduations and all the weddings and everything. So.
And what I love seeing, I love seeing your Facebook posts of all of their accomplishments and all of the events. So keep that up as well.
Well, and I like all your art things that you're doing.
Oh, thank you. It shocks me that I'm making money at it now. It's like, it's just something I've always done as a hobby. And then after code, I was like, I'll try to make a little side gig, a little small business. And now I'm like, I could make some decent money throughout the year if I go to enough art shows and sell enough of this and make, you know, make some stuff that'll.
That is great.
So it's
great.
I'm still in awe that people value it enough to spend money on it. And so it is really fulfilling to do, because teaching is great, but it's so heuristic. It's so like, you never know how good of a job you're doing. You never know in exact numbers how you're affecting kids or if you're affecting kids until, I think I mentioned on the podcast before,
exactly.
But like 8 years later, they'll come by and tell you like, I didn't even know you enjoyed my class, let alone that I inspired you. And,
exactly.
But with the art, it's like, I've done this, I've finished this, I've sold it for this amount of money. And like, it's like, I made one thing and it's good and people enjoy it. So it's been good to have both.
You have instant affirmation for that.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen in teaching. I tell them all the time. I say, years from now, you will be shocked at who comes back and tells you what a difference you made in their life. And it'll be someone that's totally unsuspecting, you know.
I had a student email me a couple of years ago, and he wrote this long, thankful email. And all I had done was say, hey, you should probably be in AP English next year. Like, you'd probably be good in AP English, right? That's all I didn't even talk with him. I just wrote it on this paper, right? I was like, hey, you're a strong enough writer to probably be in AP next year. And that was enough to, like, you know, I saw something in him, and he, you know, now he's an educator as well in science. And so it's like, okay, all right.
See,
well.
that's such a great story. That's why I share those kind of things with my first year teachers, because they get really down sometimes.
Oh yeah.
And
I remember.
Have to kinda pick them up and say, you'll never know, but someday you'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? And I had one student too. He was the most sourpussed face the whole year. He was in the back just drawing and doodling, never listening. And the next year he sees me and like, hey, Mr. Dye, how's it going? Hey, I loved your class. Like, what are you talking about? Get out of here. Anyway. All right. So I do have a 5-question quiz for you. So now I'm reversing. I'm turning the tables. And of course, this will be questions about A Tale of Two Cities, the first book that I ever enjoyed as a student. And let's see how much you remember, Mrs. Banner. But before we do that, I've got a prepared statement that I read to all my guests. Mrs. Banner, because of the way you have inspired generations of students and teachers, I am sincerely grateful and better for having known you. You are one of the hundreds of kind, generous, and benevolent people I know, in a world where we need every single one we can get. So please keep being awesome, doing awesome things, and mentoring awesome teachers.
How nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now I'm going to be mean. All right. Number 1, what is the message that Mr. Lorry sends via the messenger from Telson's bank at the beginning of A Tale of Two Cities? Multiple choice. Is it A, abort mission, B, turn around, C, recalled to life, or D, continue as planned?
I don't know. Recall to life is a big thing in all of that, so I don't know if it was at that point or not.
That is correct. Recall to life. Yes.
Oh.
That was when they were going to get Dr. Manet out of the... Was he in the Bastille, or was he
I can't remember any either. Anyway, this is terrible. Number two, who delivers the message to Mr. Lorre? So this is the character who stops the coach and gives the message. Was it Dr. Manet? Was it Jerry Cruncher? Was it Mr. Stryver? Or was it Sidney Carton?
I don't know. Jerry Cruncher?
Correct. Look at that. And I remember you telling us to go with our first instinct in class as well. You were also, what was it? Something about divine inspiration. You would say, if a divine inspiration hasn't hit yet, it won't, or something like that. I may be conflating that with somebody
a lot,
else, but
I'll
yeah.
Tell you that. You remember a lot that I didn't remember.
Number three, what did Mrs. Cruncher do that made Mr. Cruncher furious? A, he prayed. Sorry, she prayed. B, she had an affair. C, she swore. Or D, she yelled at little Jerry.
I think she prayed.
Correct. He would. I only remember this because I looked up the answers recently. So he thought she was praying against him and that everything bad happened because of her prayer.
Yeah, because of that.
You are 3 for 3. Number four. What was the code name of Mrs. Defarge's sidekick and one of the leaders in the revolution? Was it A, La Guillotine, B, The Terror, C, The Vengeance, or D, The Murderer?
The Vengeance?
Correct, correct. It was like a code name, I guess, they use. I don't remember that. I just read like a child's adapted version to my daughter recently, but I don't think that was in it.
Oh, really? How nice.
She enjoyed it a little bit. She likes others, a little more engaging stuff for her age. But all right, and last but not least, number five. In which prison was Charles Darnay held? Now, this is going to be a trick question. Wink, wink. A, La Force. B, La Bastille. C, the Tower of London. Or D, Riker's Prison.
It was the Bastille, wasn't it?
It was not. It was La Force. That's what I put as my answer when I was taking the practice quiz. But I guess they held him in a different prison when they switched with Sidney Carton.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, Dr. Manet was in the Bastille. They rescued him when they stormed it. But they snuck him out, but then they stormed it and they found the message that was the evidence that his family had assaulted the Defarge's niece or something. I need to go back and reread it. It's been so many years.
Oh, gosh, me too.
And I've never had the privilege to teach it. I want to teach it as well. No, I think I did teach it one year. But all right. Well, good job. That was a passing grade. 80%, 4 out of 5 is not bad. And that question I would have missed as well. I would have said the Bastille. So thank you for doing this. All of your former students that you have inspired will be glad to hear it, especially the Fab Four with Laura, Lauren, and Toby. So yeah, check it out. And Lauren, the episode with Lauren will come out. Oh, we didn't even mention that Lauren has a book coming out. August.
I know, it's soon, isn't it?
Late August. So I think it's the 24th.
Yeah, I think so.
It's coming out. So
yeah, she sent me immediately when they accepted.
I bet she did.
She was so excited. So.
And I've been in a writing group with her and Laura and another friend for 10 years now. And so we're all excited. So now the other three of us need to get our butts in gear and get more manuscripts out there.
What's Laura doing?
Laura is working at the Hearst Library still. So she's there. She lives in Fort Worth. We go to her house every 3 months for when it's her turn to host. And so she's there. And she's writing as well. And, doing great.
I'm going to see her.
Yep. She works at I guess she works all around, but yeah.
She's in the main Hearst Library.
Yep.
There's only one, I guess.
Pipeline Precinct.
Yep. I'm going to go see her. Because I see Toby because I make him come out. You know, he's always in the back being important.
Well, so, and Lauren bought a house in HEB. She's right over by where my dad lives. She's over right by the, I don't want to say too much on a public podcast, but she's right over by in that area.
Right. So you're Margot's how old?
She is 6. So I've got a 6 and an 8-year-old. And so she just finished her kindergarten year. And she's our tough as nails daughter. Whereas our first one is a little bit more gentle, soft, sweet.
What's her name?
Samantha.
Samantha.
Yeah, our oldest is Samantha. Yeah. Margot's the younger one.
Well, I've loved this. I've enjoyed visiting with you so much. So, I like I say, I always keep up with you, but, you know, y'all are busy being young parents.
I know. So. It's hard. It's hard.
Yes.
Keeps us busy.
Busy.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. This is it's always good to talk to you. We had talked at that coffee shop. That was a few years back now that you met Lauren and Laura.
That was a few years back. Yeah. So, well, tell all the four musketeers that I said hello.
I shall. I'll text them right now. And this episode will probably come out in the next, I think you're number seven. Yes, number seven of this summer. And I'm about to release Lauren's episode this week. So this one should be about out in about 7 weeks. I'm trying to think who you may have had. You had Matt Schoolfield. I interviewed him last summer. Conrad Hartman, Matt Hartman.
Matt Hartman?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right?
I have to tell you this story. He came in, you know, he played that guitar.
Yeah.
He came in and it was Christmas time and I had Kenny G going, you know, as kids were moving to come into class. And I'll never forget, he came and he said, "God, Miss B, what did we ever do to you? You have to listen to that." And I said, "Well, I'll make a deal with you, Mr. Guitar Man. The last week of school, you bring your guitar and we'll listen to you every day instead of Kenny G." I never will forget that. Hartman. That's amazing.
Did he bring it? He probably did.
Yes, of course.
And then played?
Of course.
So last summer I did Katy Paris. She was her senior high. Matt Schoolfield, Robert Williams.
Robert Williams?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, right? Conrad, Matt Hartman, and then you didn't have Casey Latham. I think she went to Bedford Junior High. Oh, Liz Fontenot as well was last summer.
Oh, yeah?
Hers was funny, too.
She had fun.
I'll send you a link because you can listen to all those before, and then Lauren's will come out Wednesday. So, if you want to see how they've been and what the heck they've been up to.
That's wonderful. I'll be so happy to be able to do that. So, all right. Well, stay in touch.
I will.
Let me know what great things you're doing. Okay.
And same to you.
You know where to find me.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
All right. Bye, Ms. Banner.
All right. Bye, Mark.
Hey guys, before the outro, just wanted to remind you that the How the Heck Have You Been podcast is brought to you by the Art by Marker deck of playing cards. So I hand drew the artwork for all 52 cards plus two jokers. It's pretty sweet. Head over to our website, artbymarker.com, to check them out and support this one-man show. Thank you. All right, that was the show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Today's episode was recorded by Mark Dye. Our editor is Mark Dye, and he is also the executive producer. The intro and outro music was composed by Mark Dye in high school. It's really just me doing this. To support the How the Heck Have You Been podcast, visit artbymarker.com and buy some cool art. Thanks, y'all.